Hello, and welcome to Crushing Deals with Spencer Kulo. Remember, on this podcast, we don't just crush deals, we are, in fact, deal crushers. I'm here today with Christine Wilson, the founder and CEO of M2M Consulting. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Spencer. Thank you for having me. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Great.
I met Christine back in the fall. She came to McIntyre for the marketing forum that McIntyre puts on every fall, and I really enjoyed talking with her about marketing, kind of the landscape of marketing, and she had some really unique perspectives on just kind of how marketing is evolving. Christine, do you mind going a bit into your background and kind of how you got to where you are today?
Absolutely. So I have interesting background. It's very much sales and marketing. And I think one of the biggest things that I always talk to people is that the two can be friends and that they should be friends. And that obviously good marketing can lead to strong sales. And so I started out doing IT sales to the government. It was maybe not the sexiest space ever. And I had this big aspiration to get into entertainment and television. I went to Manhattan and got a job with Oxygen, which is a cable network targeting women, which is where I got my first exposure to the specific nuances to marketing to women and how that all works. My role was as a marketing manager, but the role was very much a sales role in many ways. And then when I came home back to DC and I had kids, I was really when social media started to emerge, and it was this great opportunity to sort of stake your claim as an expert in a space where, you know, everyone was learning, and anyone could really get themselves up to speed and understand how to use social media for their businesses, because it wasn't quite as complex as it is today. Uh-huh. And that's when I started my consultancy, helping businesses utilize social media to tell their story and to reach targeted audiences. So that was sort of the early stages. And yeah, that was the beginning.
I really like what you said about how closely tied sales and marketing are. It's one of the things that I've talked about both in my blog and on my podcast is how, despite the fact that sales and marketing could almost be a dirty word for some kids my age, they think, it's somebody trying to force a product on you. What it really is learning how to communicate with people and learning how to engage with people. And for me, the start of that is always understanding the audience and understanding the people that you're trying to get at.
Yeah. Well, and I think unfortunately, you know, my father was a salesman and I envisioned him knocking door to door, you know, kind of like with the vacuum cleaner and saying, hey, you want to check my vacuum cleaner out? And he was very much not that, you know, he was doing very highly technical sales to the government and all sorts of things. So understanding, well, one, I always say to people, especially coming out of school, sales can be a highly lucrative career if done well. Yeah. The skills you learn in sales are something no one can take away. You know, it will build you in any business career. And what I most during my days today is sell. It's really, I am the face of business development for my company.
Absolutely. Now, going a little back to what you were talking about social media and kind of how at the beginning that was very complex, it was less complex, and now there's a lot more nuance to that. What is M2M Consulting doing with social media that you guys kind of feel that you're on the forefront of that really sets you guys apart as a company?
Well, because we're small and nimble, we can make decisions to try new things that are technologically advanced pretty quickly. So I actually think that, you know, social media at this point is a changing space on a weekly, if not daily basis. And so when something new comes out, it's a matter of testing and trying it very quickly and figuring out if it's something we should implement into our customer strategy. So I don't have to wait for some sort of big bureaucratic process to say, hey, guy posting on Instagram a new multi-picture or multi-picture and video post because that just launched last week, we can actually test it and get it out there and start using it right away. So then we have become the experts. So our customers rely on us to make good recommendations about things they should be doing. But the space and what you can be doing is so exciting. I mean, the technology is just running right now.
Well, would you argue that it's almost better as a small agency to be involved in social media? Because, like you said, there are too many steps with a larger agency having to go through that process. Do you think that you guys are better positioned than a bigger agency to take advantage of the changes in social media?
I think sometimes we are. Sometimes our budgets for buying equipment may be more limited, so we may not have, the $5,000 360 camera. We may have the $400 360 camera. So the other thing is making sure we partner when we need things at a higher production level than maybe we can do in-house. So making sure we do those kind of things. But most of our clients and most of what you're creating for social has to have what we always call it's like a social quality level of production, which my argument right now needs to be affordable and can't be super high production. It very rarely will pay off in the benefits in the long run.
So then talking about, video production and creating content for social specifically, how has that changed how people record and how people create video over, say, the past 5 years? Because before it was, you need television, you need very high production value, you need your commercials to be very professionally recorded. And now people are engaging so much with vertical video on their phones, that is not that high production value.
So when I just think back 3 or 4 years ago about what I created on social for my clients, number one, we were posting 3 to 4 times a day on Facebook. So can you imagine how much content? The quality wasn't very good because it was just such incredible volume. Two, we were rarely, if ever, using video. I can't even remember at the point at which you actually could post video when that changed. But three, if we did shoot it, it was on our smartphones, right? So that was it. There was no real savvy editing. There was no graphic overlay. There were no real cool techniques. In the past 3 years, I would say that we have invested most heavily in video and video production more than anything else. And that is, we have a videographer on staff. We have editing tools. We have, I can't even tell you how many cameras we have of all sorts of variation and microphones and lighting and a studio with a green screen. So we are doing so much in video because video is where everything is right now. To small businesses, though, I'll say to them, hey, I'd rather you get your phone out and shoot something over nothing. Don't be so afraid that you have to buy a ton of equipment to do it.
Yeah, well, and that's, and one thing that kind of points me to that is that there are so many people who are able to have very successful YouTube channels or very successful Instagram pages that only use their smartphones. A really cool video that I saw was Casey Neistat before the iPhone 6S came out, I think, recorded one of his vlogs entirely on an iPhone 6S in 4K quality. And granted, he had a microphone attached and he had lenses attached, but so many people who are content creators will say, listen, like, that's not a barrier for you. That's, you have to just do.
So, absolutely. Yeah. I wonder how Samsung feels about that he created now that he's the Samsung spokesman, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was a sponsored video or anything. I think he just, decided
just to experiment.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, we have a couple of things that actually allow us to do some pretty cool stuff with our phones. We have, something called Beast Pro. Have you heard about Beast?
I have not heard about Beast Pro.
Beast Grip, I think it is. So it attaches to your smartphone and you can add lighting, lenses, microphones, all sorts of things. Plus it gives you sort of a rig to hold it. So you're not sort of holding a phone and you can attach it to tripods. And I mean, you walk with one of those and somebody thinks you're actually doing a major production and you're on your iPhone. Yeah.
That's fun. So talking about somebody like Casey Neistat and how, just using an iPhone and showing that he's, that you can record that on your iPhone. I wonder how many people that has influenced to buy the iPhone or to start recording in that way. And that's something you and I have talked about, is how the change in people in influencers and influencers' taste and what influencers say is now becoming such an important aspect of how you market to people on a personal level. Can you go into that a little?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, Casey is a great example of kind of a supreme influencer in many ways. He came in and in, 2 years built this astronomically huge audience on YouTube and, has since actually shut down doing anything on YouTube, and he's become a spokesman for Samsung, and he's doing all sorts of really creative things. But there are people that are coming in with really interesting points of view, and they're aligning themselves with brands through partnerships that, sometimes are actually contracted relationships, which is a big part of what we do. And it creates, I mean, we look at them as part of our creative extension of our agency. We want them to create content. Sometimes it's written, sometimes it's photography, sometimes it's video. We've even had artists drawing things for us. And then sometimes they may not be a creative, but they have a great point of view and an audience that we want to reach. So we'll actually help them create the content. And then they're talking about brands and the power of their message and their if it's especially if it's authentic to their audience can be incredibly powerful for a brand.
Yeah. Now why is that more valuable than just the brand themselves saying, "Oh, well, look at how great we are," or just kind of traditional advertising?
Well, so one of the things is, you get that sort of validation from this person who's already built trust with their audience. So a lot, especially with millennials, they and what our youngest new generation that's coming in, so children and very young teens, they actually identify these influencers as close friends, as people they trust, as people they have relationships. Those people, it used to be that, as me as a Gen Xer, I would have to go call one of my friends that I actually knew in real life, I always say. They don't need that. They're excited for their favorite makeup blogger to tell them about a great new mascara.
Well, that was I remember when I recorded my first vlog, some of my friends were like, "Why, it's just a episode of your daily life. Why is that cool?" And I watch vlogs all the time. I love vlogs. I love just seeing how people live, and I don't know if it's the validation of, of another person who is like me saying what I'm doing is okay or why it is, but it's definitely something that people are paying attention to.
Yeah, it's become a big source of content for people's lives. So what we see now with younger millennials and even younger children is that they turn to YouTube before they turn to the television.
And I remember when you came into our class, actually. Christine came into our class, it was this past Friday, and talked with her business partner about influencer marketing a bit, and mentioned that kids would rather watch Minecraft on YouTube for a half an hour than a TV show.
Absolutely. My kids will always choose YouTube over Disney XD, which is very frustrating to me because, I still think of viewing television and movies as a family experience together. Everybody watching the same screen, having the same experience, being able to interact about with it. My children want to sit on their own individual screens, experience their own thing. And I have yet to find anything on YouTube that I want to watch for half an hour at a time. I just, it's not in my mentality. It might be there. I just have yet to find
Yeah.
it.
Well, another thing too is I feel like one of the people who watch YouTube videos for a half an hour, they are distracted while they're doing, it's not that they're sitting in front of the YouTube video and just watching. They're on their phones as well. They're doing something else. But one thing that you just mentioned really is interesting to me is how that watching a movie as a family, that's a traditional family activity. And it will be interesting to see as social media, as digital pervades our lives more and more, how that starts to change how people interact, with their families and just very traditional things that, maybe the way that families interact changes because the way that friends interact changes, the way that, people that you don't see that often absolutely changes.
Well, I thought it was pretty funny the other day when my 9-year-old, who does not, he has an iPod, but found that he could download an app that would allow him to text from it when he's connected to Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
So he texted me down. I was downstairs and he texted me to say, "What's for dinner?" And I thought it was funny because I think he was trying to show off he could text. Yeah. But it's disconcerting too, right? I mean, we're in the same home. You better know that that is funny once, but that's not how we're going to communicate. Yeah, that's not okay. But the other thing is, it does open up opportunities where, you know, there are people in my life that would not see my children or things my kids are doing or I'm doing that we get to have. It feels like very personal relationships because we're seeing these milestones in our lifetime that we might not, you know, talk to that person for 10 or 15 years otherwise.
It's almost the same thing with how you and I are recording this podcast here is, you know, we can see each other across Skype and it gives it a totally different feel than just across a phone line.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. So,
When I had to plug in my computer.
So I want to switch kind of topics a little bit and talk about your experience with entrepreneurship, because that's one of the big things that I really try to talk about on my podcast and in my blog, because I think it's something that's difficult to define and to kind of capture what it means. Everybody seems to have their own different definition of what it means to be an entrepreneur. And just to start, you know, for you with your experience starting your own agency, what does entrepreneurship mean to you?
Absolutely. Well, for me, when I started the business and I had two small children, I wanted flexibility in my life. I did not want to be commuting long distances, sitting 9 to 5 at a desk. I've always been a person who actually accomplishes things probably in shorter amounts of time and then found myself sort of counting hours down till I could leave and not look like I was shortcutting the day, whether I was accomplishing something or not. I would rather work 12 exciting hours because I'm doing what I truly love than sort of punching a clock for anyone. I'm also very bossy. I like to be the boss. And I like to make decisions without somebody necessarily, you know, telling me otherwise. And so I really did it to be a one-person consultant and to be able to work a little bit, bring in income for my family, be home for my children, never having the initial aspiration to build sort of an ongoing agency or business that involved a lot of other people. Maybe a year or two in, when I realized that working with really small clients on small budgets and small projects wasn't as exciting to me as getting to work with bigger brands and bigger strategy and bigger campaigns and bigger budgets. And that just required that I had to have support staff. I couldn't possibly out of my innate salesperson drive. I'm always trying to sell more. So sometimes the growth has been thoughtful and sometimes it's been accidental.
That's kind of funny. So what then, when you were looking to grow the business at the start, you first started to realize that, yes, I want to take on these bigger clients. What were the biggest challenges that you were starting to face? What was the stuff that you had to keep in mind that maybe you didn't expect as much?
Well, number one, I'll tell you, and you'll hear this from most small businesses, is cash flow. Cash flow is a challenge. I mean, businesses of all sizes. And what happens is I'm kind of usually lowest down on the totem pole. So when bigger businesses that are my clients are having cash flow issues, I get paid last, right? And then, you know, I will tell you that sometimes the biggest companies, the biggest brands are the worst about paying on time. And so, you know, there's expenses. I have payroll, I have ad spend, I have influencer fees. And then also getting a line of credit initially was hard when you're sort of unproven and you have a big jump in maybe that, you know, I remember when we first had a month where we had to front like a $26,000 ad spend. And I was we don't have $26,000 just floating around. I mean, it was almost like a personal investment by me. I'm loaning my client money. So we had to learn a lot of things that, you know, I don't have an MBA. I also had not necessarily had a mentor who had run an agency who said to me, get that ad spend up front, or you know, you have to plan if they're going to pay 45 days late. Typically, here's how you plan and what you tell them they're going to have to pay up front. So cash flow has been probably our biggest challenge always. Now, obviously, when you get to the point where profitability is up and you have some money in the bank, that can help. We've also had times where we were not expecting the tax implications that we were going to have because of profitability. So, you know, there's always those challenges. And then as we've grown, having more, we have very young staff. They're generally right out of college and in their mid-20s. I have a very close staff. It feels like a family. But that brings a lot of challenges, too, because we're a service-based business. So if a client goes away, we have to scale down the number of people we have. Mm-hmm. The client, you know, comes back, then we have to scale up quickly, or people have to work extra. So just dealing with the dynamics of so many people, everybody's living their own personal life as their own, you know, and I try to be very cognizant of that. And that can be very challenging to create work-life balance for people and to take into consideration their personal things they're dealing with, but also knowing, hey, here's the business goals and objectives we have to accomplish. So I know you're having a tough day, but I need you to get back to work, you know?
Yeah. HR and internal, you know, dealing with the internal people in the company is something that I think is really important. And it's interesting that we talked about sales and how you focus so much on the customer and understanding the customer's desires and wants. But I would say as a CEO, you are almost a salesman or saleswoman to your employees in a way. And you need to, you know, they need to be buying in to the culture that you have so that when it becomes difficult and when you have that added, you know, that added workload, or when, you know, the client that you thought was going to pay maybe doesn't come through, they need to be there for you. And that, you know, kind of all starts with the culture of, you know, family that you have created.
Yeah, absolutely. And we try to make sure that we build in, you know, other value. You know, if monetarily we can't have it be where somebody might want to be, can we give them more flexibility in their work schedule? Can they work from home? Can they, you know, we try to do bonding events within the, you know, and we go play laser tag and we go to the beer garden and we do those kind of things. So we try to build value. And millennials, I will be just very honest, are different than my, you know, my Gen X generation in what they consider a value. And it's not just money. You know, I think most Gen Xers, you'd be like, just pay me more. Just pay me more. You know, a millennial is not that cut and dry with what they value. That's challenging.
Yeah. And that's something that we've absolutely gotten into at McIntyre in my MS and Commerce program is, you know, how has corporate social responsibility changed how businesses operate? There are, you know, people in the program who believe that if a company isn't leaving a net positive on the world, and, you know, not even talking about profits, but being a positive influence on the world, if a company's not doing that, then they shouldn't be a company. Whereas there are other people who are saying, I want to be an investment banker and I want to make six figures and nothing, you know.
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care about it. I'm going to work hard and I want my own money. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and we had a desire by our staff to create some sort of way for people to be involved in a nonprofit in some way. So, you know, we threw around a lot of ideas. Do we go build a house through Habitat for Humanity? What do we do? And then we decided to actually create our own program. It's called MTU, and it's we allow nonprofits to apply for pro bono digital marketing services. I pay my team up to 4 hours a month of salary that they can put towards these pro bono services for these nonprofits. And we have a committee that selects the nonprofits that we're willing to work with. So nobody will feel politically, you know, won't have any political issues with any of them. So we work with Bridges to Work, which is one of Marriott International's, they have sort of a philanthropic arm. And then we work with Friends of the Children, and we help them with their strategy, with creating content, with video. And we do it all pro bono. You know, we get the satisfaction as a team that we're actually doing what we do well and giving back to, you know, these wonderful organizations.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. I think that's a great program. Well, I'll tell you what, Christine, it's been awesome having you on the show. Thank you so much for, you know, joining us. And it's, you know, it's been great talking with you about sales, about influencer marketing.
It's been great talking to you too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. And thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. Remember to keep on crushing deals and keep driving those Miatas around.